We're going to start with a summary of the articles, and then we're going to have folks. A summary of the articles. Then we're going to look at the one that people like the best. We're going to do a poll for that. Then we're going to have a conversation about why. Then we're going to look at what article was the most, disruptive or created the most tension. We'll do a polling on that, and then we'll have some conversations about that. And then at the end, we'll kind of step back and say, were there any themes in these articles, or in our discussions? Without further ado, we will. I'll move into the articles. Also, what we did new today, it was an experiment, is we met 15 minutes earlier, and I went through the articles, and then I made like about a minute and a half overview of each, and just it was fire hose, but just to review them. So we're considering offering that as an option to start 15 minutes earlier if you want to review. And Mike was on the call, and he'd read the articles a long time ago, and it's like it was good refresher for him. Bruce found it helpful. They were the focus group. If you don't need to review the articles, you can just start at the top of the hour. I think that's the way it seems to be moving. I'm going to do a little bit of a fire hose of overview of the five articles and the one webinar or the podcast. Deciding on your organization for 2021. Now, as organization design folks, not a lot of surprises. But what I do want to highlight here is, first off, I just love the axiom that he offered. Strategy sets structure, and structure breeds behavior. And he says they seem to remain over time. And again, he has a long-term perspective in terms of the design work. And again, when we think about the components of an organization as the levers of culture and all that, it fits very nicely into that. He also talks about how organizations, leaders, frequently don't do redesigns because they're so complex and so difficult. And frequently, they end up just doing a part of the organization operating model shift or something like that. But ultimately, there's implications for that because, it's a system. He talks about, and this is what I'm going to highlight, the four things that we as designers need to consider when it comes to structure. And I like these. It's kind of a nice, concise framework. The product to market strategies. How does the organization tend to lead in their product arenas? And then from a strategic perspective, the second point is how is this corporate strategy going to take advantage of the product market strategy? Which is a nice complement in terms of the micro and the macro. And then people, skills, attitudes, and individuals in the organization, they need to be considered and aligned. And then constraints, the cultural, environmental, legal, et cetera, et cetera. So nice, four nice, kind of principles. And then he says, considerations, and then he has five principles. First, the specialization principle. This is how you set unit boundaries to accomplish the most important benefits with specialization. And then the cooperation principle. Define the units, based on the tasks that so you minimize transaction activities. The knowledge competency principle. Identify which responsibilities to decentralize and which ones to build into the hierarchy. And then the fourth one was control and commitment principle. Again, how do you define processes that ensure that managers or the system of control can manage what's occurring and make sure responsibilities are carried out. And then the final one, which is always the challenging one, but it's the innovation and adaptation principle, which you have to have. And so there's a paradox, and that's probably the big challenge between how do you design for both the stable processes and the dynamic processes. The second article was about platforms and ecosystems, and I learned a lot on this. The platform definition that they used was a platform is an asset for a business, and it removes friction from the marketplace. And I love this. This really cut to the core for me. The oldest example of platforms are village markets because they reduce the cost of transacting and allow scale. So That's how he defines the platform. The ecosystem is, again, a different way of defining it than I'm familiar with, but it's a group of organizations that come together to deliver a unique value proposition that none of the individuals could do individually. And the example that he uses is a healthy life conglomerate company, Vitality or something like that, where they bring people who have, who want to go to the gym, who want to buy sports equipment, who have healthy food, and who want to buy insurance, and ultimately have a package that meets multiple needs rather than just the individual needs. So that was the ecosystem versus the platform conversation, which was different than the platform conversation we had as a topic a while back. The third one is really kind of is really very timely in terms of Sephora's groundbreaking study on racial bias. Again, the first well-researched study in the retail environment about that. They identified something called, or they measured racially biased and exclusionary treatment in stores, and they took it from the customer journey perspective, the entering the store, in the store, and then after the store experience. And basically what they said was there's all kinds of stuff that can be done from the entry perspective to create a more inviting environment for diversity. And then the real challenge was the experience in the store and people who were different than, than the white folks. It's all the people of diversity who were the ones who were met, who were in the survey and measured, identified all kinds of micro and macro experiences of bias. And then the post assessment, basically they said the research is really clear because people who experience that, 50%, 75% won't say anything, they'll just leave. And then, and other folks just won't come back. And so there's really not much that can be done if that occurs in the store. So there's some great possibility for some improvement here. And then he outlines 8 or 10 really substantive kinds of things that would help in terms of training and developing the skill sets and knowledge and understanding amongst the staff, and then maintaining that. The fourth article is Nikolai Warren's, and he talks about when should we consolidate resources. This is the shared services conversation again. Again, these things come back, and basically, those conversations were really big in the 90s and the early part of this century, but the way those were attended to were before we had a lot of Agile. And so this is basically come back, look at it, and say that is a relevant question to ask about. Should we centralize shared services, or should we have them decentralized into the units? And what he did was he said, again, there's not a lot of research, not a lot of tools, but he identified four questions, which are just pretty solid questions that we should be asking if we're trying to make those decisions. The need for technical learning and functional specialization. Again, and all of these are, if you need more of it, then you want to share services. If you don't need it, then keep it in the unit. The need for consistency and technological processes across the business. Centralization, if you need that, if you need more of that, not if you don't. The variability of demand for resources. If you've got pretty steady demand and workload is pretty manageable, then leaving it in the units makes sense. But if you don't, then you want to have shared service. And then the uniqueness of the task. If it's not unique, decentralized. If it's very unique, centralized. So again, I think just a really nice set of questions that we would be asking when posed with a question like that. And again, he mentions that we need a lot more research about that. Then Naomi kind of begins her tour de force on organization design systems model. Again, and I think that, she shows the various models and basically says those models are just models and they make sense if we engage the organization about what the things are that they need and really use those different frameworks as a, as a menu, as options, and say which one might fit better. And then also the other part of it, and none of the models will actually fit perfectly, and then how do you adapt them to the specific needs that you know, that an organization has. So it's really about how do you adapt what you're doing in the deployment process. So, and then the final one was a podcast, which was a fascinating podcast, really about the built-in bias that occurs as we have structural shifts in the world, in business and industry. And he talks about the four industrial revolutions and how every time that what has happened in the labor market is the labor market has scapegoated folks. And he's Irish, so he talked about being Irish and how they the thing was lazy and unreliable. Again, anytime that you generalize those kinds of things to a workforce, you know, they you have negative impacts. He also said that, of course, if people know people in the other group, they don't do that. But when they don't know them, they do that. And then goes in to talk about the research from the 80s and beyond, or in the past, which illustrates the cost, the real cost associated with that. But then gave of not considering diversity, not addressing prejudice. But then gave the example that, like the cake store that, you know, did not want to make cakes for gay couples, and how that went all the way to the Supreme Court and all that, and how individual businesses, regardless of whether or not it has a financial impact, may make choices that are irrational. So that's the tour de force of the articles. And so I think, Tanya, we're ready for the poll. And so the question is, which was your favorite?
And Bill, one little piece of housekeeping we did not take care of is we've gone two different ways lately on people indicating their interest in participating actively versus observing.
Right.
Do you want to have people go ahead and indicate that in the participants list or just raise their hand and jump in when they're ready?
So, you know, if you're hanging out with us, you're gonna share if you want to, and you're going to be able to pass if you don't want to. So, Tanya, how has it been done in the past? Just have people raise their hands?
Well, just last call, Bruce had people raise their hands. Prior to that, we'd started using the participants list, and then you just kind of used that. You indicated, yes, you wanted to actively participate, and then you would use that as who you wanted to call on.
So what will be helpful for me is just have folks, while we're finishing up the poll, raise their hand with the little raise hand feature under reactions, and let me know if you're going to participate.
With the understanding that if you want to jump in it at some point and you're not on the standing list, you can do that. All right, 10 of 12 of you have indicated, so I'm going to share. We have a noted favorite this month.
Okay, deciding on your organizational structure is 50%. And then we've got two tied at 20%, consolidate resources and organization design models, Nikolai's and Naomi's articles. So let's begin with a round robin on why is it that was a key structure for half of us? Who would like to start? Andrew?
I am one of the ones who didn't read the articles, Bill, although I voted, all right? And I will tell you that I go for my aunt. I did vote, and your synopsis of the article was the most convincing, and I probably had immediacy bias as well.
Sweet. That's a good answer. Who else has a response to that question? So I'm going to I did not see who raised their hands. In terms of participating. So I'm going to just go around and please pass if you don't want to answer the question. So Jardina, where were you on that one, on that article?
I'm glad you asked, William, because that was my least favorite article, but I'm going to tell you why right now.
Sweet.
I'm going to be a total curmudgeon today, just warning you all. It was a lot of textbook stuff, and I appreciate that, and the axioms were fine. But the slant of the article to me, the tone of the article was really about control. And what I really didn't like about the article was when he said that you had to make sure to you had to design the organization so that people couldn't game it. and not include them in it and bring people from the outside, like so untrusting of the people in the organization that I was just so unagile, so untrusting that I when he said that fifth thing about innovation and adaptation, I was like, well, you're never going to be able to do that with the attitude that you've laid forth here. So I had a total, this is the one that I was going to vote for later. Total reaction to this article for that. But I mean, the stuff is sound, right? It's stuff we all know.
Right.
But the slant to it was, yeah.
Great. All right. Great. Thank you, Tridina. Mike, how about you?
Well, I was just thinking about the topic in general, and the idea of control was something that's an issue. But you can have control by management, or you can create systems that people can operate where they can control themselves. So that's what I was looking at as sort of a bridge to getting from that control mindset to the empowerment mindset by creating the systems and letting people monitor their own behavior and go for a particular goal.
Great, 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 great. Bruce, how about you?
I voted for this as the one I wanted to talk about. I did not like this article for some of the same reasons that Jardina said, and that's partly what made me so interested in it. My biggest objection was different than Jardina's. My biggest objection was he did what I thought of as such a good sales job that he really laid out the case for why senior managers should get into this stuff. And I thought that was well done, and I resented it for that reason. There's a little bit of psychotherapy in here, and that is I believe that I underdo that, and I also feel like it's not moral to do that. So, you know, that's my own problem, but it made me very interested in the article. What I really wanted to do and may now do is a similar kind of article, but now with a twist that gets it out of the salesy kind of mode, out of that control kind of mode too, but yet puts up some of those same really good principles.
Great, great. And again, one of the questions, my questions toward the end is, you know, is there anything that you're going to do as a result of this? And so Bruce, you've already kind of identified that, which is great. To me, this is part of what this is about. Craig, your perspective on this article.
I like the fact that they really emphasize that some of our band-aid approaches like Agile, like Six Sigma, Lean, and that type of thing really is just inadequate for really solving the big problems. And so there again, the strategy, structure, behavior, action really made sense, I think, with a very, very compelling. And yeah, I agree that some of it was, you know, not that much simple. And when I looked at those five principles of good organization design, what struck me is when I go back to my old days of socio-technical systems and some of the principles that Albert Cherns designed back in the 50s and 60s, they're very consistent with those.
Yeah.
So it's almost like, have we really advanced the field? Or are those principles just very robust and have stood the test of time?
Yeah, I'm going to vote for the latter, Craig. Anyway, Arnold, how about you?
I think some of the folks, you know, have already talked about, this wasn't my favorite article, but I thought it was, to a certain degree, the most relevant article in the sense that, you know, I like the relationship that he was pointing to, you know, about strategy and structure. A lot of the work that I'm doing with clients is focusing on structure, you know, as part of a organizational redesign. I think there's a lot of ambiguity in that conversation about what structure really is and what constitutes structure, right, which he didn't go into. And I think that would have helped the article a lot more. I mean, so for instance, one of the things that I've been doing with clients in talking about structure, you know, is that I've designed this methodology and this tool to be able to have clients explore, you know, different forms of organizational structure, you know, from agile to more, you know, hierarchical. And there's always a separation. What I found over the past, you know, 6 months, and maybe it's a result of the pandemic in terms of how it's affected people's thinking, is that, you know, they tend to separate structure from management structure in terms of decision-making versus processes and protocol structure. So I've got clients that want more structure when it comes to, you know, more in-place protocols to make things easier to accomplish, right. But they always want to go to what I call a more agile management structure in terms of decision making. I think that article would have been more helpful if he delved more into you know what structure really is and how you begin to judge that. But one of the reasons that I didn't like the article, even though I liked the subject matter, was again it. But like some people said, it just seemed very salesy. That the author was coming at it as if he was trying to sell his organization services, as opposed to really making a contribution to thinking and thought leadership.
Right. And again, it's one of the things about marketing. Marketing appeals to our emotions. And to me, it was a very seductive article. But again, all the reasons that you guys have already identified, particularly the one about the lack of clarity between structure and design, the organization design. Jackie, did you have a perspective?
I did. Well, let me first fess up. I didn't read the article either.
Okay.
Immediately when you were giving the great synopsis, I had a reaction to it that I didn't like, didn't agree, something was grating. Then I lost connection and I came in on your summary about the Irish being lazy and reliable. So then I was like, oh, I'm in the really wrong place altogether. But I had actually listened to that podcast, so I know exactly where that is.
Right.
I have a slightly different, I think, view of the world. I think in circles. Mm. And when I was listening to this, some of the things that, you know, struck me was, you know, it's coercive and controlling to have so many positions in. And the question I was kind of thinking is, why do we need more structure instead of creating those spaces where people can make, that we trust that the people we have in for the jobs are the right people? And one thing that kind of struck me was, if you have specialisms, and this is what I see all the time, you're creating divides and you're allowing people to go, well, that's not me, that's them, that's not us, that's... So then there's actually a lot, there's much more level of effort and work across people to understand. And it actually ties in with the podcast, the idea of the rise of prejudice in the world now and the disruption and the way people are displaced because of technology. These structures that did start off in Taylorism now are, you know, giving those pockets for people to either tunnel into and hide away from, or, you know, not necessarily spread the risk as well. So there's something about being overly structured that I always think about hierarchy, not as just structure and command and control, but actually for a purpose. And with the way the world has been in the last year, especially, the structures don't always give the spaces for the change to happen. And I think there's another way we can do it. So it was really interesting, but it was just something I'll have to read it now and go back. And then the salesy piece, I'll have to look at that as well, because I'm sure that will grate on me as well. But something about holacracy, I think, as an antidote to some of the problems, and that's missing. It's very Cartesian dualism on speed. You know, so if we think in circles, it's a very straight line. So there was something, I think, for me. But thanks for sharing that, because it was really thought-provoking.
Sure. And ultimately, Jackie, as I'm hearing you talk, you just really remind me of really the requirement. You know, it's not either or, it's both and. And it's really important to determine where we need stability and where we need dynamism. And again, you all have mentioned that, and it's never a monolithic kind of thing, and this article kind of implies that or infers that for me. Let me see. Gina, did you have any observation about this article?
Did not get to reading due to various conflicting things.
Very understandable. But I'm wondering, Gina, again, you've heard us talk, any perspectives in terms of this conversation?
I just put in the chat, and listening to this, it sounds like, you know, we really haven't advanced. And I've been working with one of my colleagues just around workspace and, you know, designing community and this kind of thing. And so it occurs to me that maybe we should stop seeing organizations as structures. You know, we're moving to workspace as just a point in time and coming together. And we might be getting in our own way, thinking that we have to come up with a structure. What we really have to do is just enable this coming to a point in time. So that's what I got out of listening to all of you.
And when we look at kind of really the cutting edge approach to design, it's not linear. And it is really more situational and circumstantial. And we kind of back into the structural piece. But I think that's a great insight. Rich, did you have any perspective that you might want to share?
I did. First of all, I appreciated your summaries because you brought out a couple of things I hadn't appreciated. There were several articles that I just dismissed and said, wow, nothing there. And your summary helped me see, well, there's something there. I wasn't incredibly impressed with any of the articles, and I happened to vote for the first one just because it was perhaps most relevant. The one I found most intriguing was the Sephora study on racial bias, and I guess I connect that. So the theme for me that I've already heard is that, gosh, in 30 years, we haven't learned anything. But on the other hand, for me, org design and racial bias, I think we've learned a tremendous amount. We're now aware of it in a way, we can talk about it in a way that we couldn't when I first got into org design. And so I guess I'm going to change my vote. I'm voting for the one on racial bias. However, I just wish there were more there about what we can do about it, because it great observations that we've had for 100 years.
And I think the insight of the article on the podcast, to me, kind of addresses, Rich, part of that, which is it hasn't been a linear process. And as we go through structural changes, major structure, from one industrial age to the other, there are consequences. So just because we addressed it at one point in time, you know, he refers to the first industrial revolution where the labor union said no women in the workforce. You know, that was the prejudice. And again, we've revisited that a couple of times. And so I think looking at it longitudinally, it kind of explains why these things show up again and again. Ultimately, Rich, as you've suggested, we have actually some ways to address that. More so, again, just in the last year with all the upheaval and the pandemic. So to me, as designers, you know, we can't just get hung up on, oh, here it is again and again. Nikolai showed the same thing. Centralization, you know, shared services are not. These things come back, and they're not coming back as the same thing. We're not at the same place. So to me, that's kind of my observation on the observations that have been made. What I want to do now, it's a couple minutes after the hour, I want to check with Jacqueline and see if you have any comments you want to make on this conversation. And you're on mute. I just want to check in. You can pass. I'm also, Paul, you came in a little bit. There you go. Hi, Jacqueline.
Yeah, I'm on my cell phone trying to press the right buttons and couldn't slide it well enough, I guess. Thanks, William. I am also in the group that did not read the articles, unfortunately, but hopefully in the future. I definitely resonate with how beautifully Gina in Austin shared her perspective, and I can definitely relate to that. The other just message that keeps coming back to me after listening to everyone today is emphasizing that it is not just one approach. I think earlier there was a member who said, well, it's not just Lean or Six Sigma or Agile, etc. No, it's really a combination of many different approaches. And that's why collaboration is so key, and having all the different helpful stakeholders involved is so critical in order to really make sustained success of positive change. So that just kept coming to me, and I thought I'd share that with the group.
Great, great. And when we look at Naomi's article, she got the closest to that, you know, really identifying that there's models, there's approaches. Again, for me, one of the things that I look at is, because we're coming from the mechanistic world, is there some humanistic aspect? Is there some integration in it? And the other piece is, do we adapt it rather than impose it? You know, are people involved locally in the design process so that it can be adapted, fit for purpose. Again, and I think Naomi's article, you know, and the questions she poses are really good in terms of that dynamic.
And there's really multiple steps. First, it's that awareness. And yes, yeah. Our country has become a bit more aware, even though we've had stages of awareness. And then really a next step can be of many steps is education, really recognizing what are the similarities, what are the differences, and really being able to create a safe environment in order to have those conversations. If there's not a safe environment, then the progress will not happen in the same capacity.
Right. And that was highlighted by the Google study on psychological safety and all of that. And what we've seen in diversity training and all of that, it's there. And we've got those now as resources and tools. Great. So I'm going to, Paul, you came in late. I just wanted to give you an opportunity if you wanted to weigh on this one, or you're welcome to pass as well.
Paul posted that he's listening in. Thanks.
Great. Okay. Thank you so much. Appreciate that. And Andrew, you're unmuted. Did you want to share something?
No, I guess I was just unmuted.
Oh, okay. All right.
But then, you know, I all right. You know, I'm like, I can't not share. So I was really not any article specifically, but I'm trying to think of the podcast I listened to that said, what is work? And talking of diversity, came to the kind of the gender difference of, you know, we were all at work and we were all at home basically as farmers. You know, we both tended the fields. And was there a difference between tending the fields or tending the kids or being in the house or being where your place of work was a field? What did that mean that you weren't at home? You were at home in the field, right? Mm. So the concept of being a housewife or a husband or whatever, going, a man going to work, kind of came out of the idea of separating work for reward, like indirect reward, versus work for making, you know, vegetables or whatever, right? So the very concept of workplace and home is fascinating, and it's almost like we've gone back to where we were, where we're working from home all the time with COVID, right? We've kind of gone back three centuries or whatever. And the other thing, as I was listening, I think it was Jacqueline or someone was talking about specialization and not wanting to have the kind of tailorized specialization part and not too many silos. But without specialization, there's no need for organizations. So I'm always curious about that. If we don't specialize, we have no need for organizations in my mind, but maybe that's a controversial view.
Right, and again, that conversation, Andrew, about specialization, to me, that it's not monolithic and it's not solid. And if we think about it really as something that's pliable, it's really ultimately specialization. Are we over-specialized? Are we not specialized enough? Is, to me, that's where do we find the balance in that polarity? Again, there's so few absolutes in complex systems.
Yeah.
So to me, yeah.
I love to say that silo is not a four-letter word.
and again, if you think about the nature of the industry and the work that's being done, there are environments and situations when you're making cans that you do want the silos potentially because it's efficient in that marketplace. It works in that marketplace. That did not work in other marketplaces though.
Did you know I've actually made cans?
No, did you?
I used to work for the world's largest packaging company, but there you go.
Right. Was it siloed, Andrew?
Yeah, there was some silos there.
Okay. All right.
Anyway, sorry, I took enough time up.
All right. So at this point, what I want to do is I want to see if there's any observations. Everyone has had an opportunity to share something and kind of listening to ourselves before we move. Because, and I want to do this because this article both had some pluses, but it also had a lot of tensions. And so I want to just kind of check in at this point and see if there's anybody who has any observations about this conversation.
Okay, I will. I think something you just said, William, reflected what a few other people have said, and for me is in a way a theme of the whole set of articles, and that is, you might have said, nothing is monolithic. And I think in a couple of different ways at least, many of the articles gave us sort of menus to consider, and then questions to help us consider those menus. And then a number of the articles also gave us either ors, you know, like platform or ecosystem, and then said, well, it could be both. and so for me, that was a theme. And I think Jacqueline, in a few words, said that. Andrew said something like that. And so for me, that's a tie together of the discussion we just had.
Right, right. And to me, the underlying issue, again, and this is subconscious, this is not conscious, is whether or not we're coming from a mechanistic perspective. You know, the world is a machine, it's linear. And again, a lot of that's so prevalent, except for everyone who's trying to change that, who are looking at things more dynamically, from a more humanistic and non-linear perspective. And to me, I think I like what you've said, Bruce, because that was, when I think about kind of the field that I had, with the exception of Naomi's article, and again, the bias article from Sephora, and the last the podcast, which were just really interesting articles, but don't really have that same bias that we see in our industry, and illustrated by articles where it's a list, it's a mechanistic kind of thing. And to me, those, Bruce, as you say, are hints. But to me, part of our job is to look at those and say, are there any nuggets in there, as people have shared? And so I think that's a great observation, Bruce. I really appreciate that. Any other observations?
I have one. I'm sorry. I've tried a few times to actually get in. I don't know if you guys can hear or if I'm too slow. I'm coming in.
You're doing fine, Jackie.
And again, it's back, I suppose, Andrew, to what you were saying, you know, like about the specializations and the silos. They are really important because they bring diversity, or they bring specialist pieces into, as you say, organizations have a purpose. And if they're not specialized, what's the point? I think a lot of organizations now are moving beyond organizational boundaries because we can no longer do things ourselves. We have to be in a chain, and people are struggling on how to reconnect the boundaries. And something that struck me was the idea of the narrative, counter-narrative that we have, either or. And that's where we get caught a lot in the conversations. And it's very rare that we're able to actually move it towards a dialogue. So the human side of the conversations, I feel that if that was part of the structure and part of the skills that people were infusing in the design, those conversations are quicker to the point and richer at the point of where the problems are. So you don't need so much control in your system, because actually people can they don't have to be, it's not controlled, but they don't have to have somebody deciding for them what needs to be done in that moment, because they have the skills to explore the diversity between them. And I just think that there's an imbalance when we look structurally one way, but forget that actually the dialogue around it, so even moving beyond this, that, the narrative and then the counter narrative, that's where we all get stuck. But actually it's about, well, why are you saying that? Or why are you curious about that? And that brings us to a different place. So I just feel there's something about organizations beyond organizations now, and at the micro level, the conversations. So that would be kind of the stretch I'd be saying. Maybe our structures aren't working as they need to.
And Jackie, what this raises for me is, again, another thing that's been around, and that's polarity mapping. Understanding that it's not either or, it's both and where is the balance in this situation? Not in the world, but in this circumstance. So that kind of thinking is an expansion of consciousness, moving from a position to kind of what are the interests, and what are we present with now? And you map it out on a polarity map. What are the pluses and minuses of both? So people can really get a feel of why we end up with, do we do shared services, you know, or do we distribute them? And to me, that's what we can do in terms of those kinds of discussions, is bring in those kinds of methods to help shift the conversation. Okay. Other observations. Jardina, how about you?
Observations on the whole conversation. I don't know. I guess I I just want to kind of go to that Nicolay Warren article that was about the consolidating of resources. So that's something that we talk about endlessly and do in the Agile world, because like you said before, we're decentralizing. So we have to figure out, well, sometimes it's a shared service. So what I thought that article did, I mean, I thought just embarking on that conversation was impressive. I put a bunch of comments in the article itself because I think it's so key. Because as Agilists, we kind of do it off the cuff, but we don't have the data to back it up. But I think the other thing there to think about is within a shared service or consolidated resource, he calls it, there's shades in there too.
Yeah.
Because I have a model, I have a slide I use that's like 8 different ways to have a consolidated resource or shared service. Like, is it a shared service that's going to teach other organizations, like a center of excellence? Or is it a shared service that's going to farm people out? Is it going to partner with you? Is it going to sit with your team? Like, how are we going to, there's so many ways. Are we going to build interfaces where you can come self-serve? You know, so a whole bunch of ways to do that to be explored, but I'm excited that he's doing that work.
Yeah, great. So again, and Jardina just kind of took us to a place where, is there some point that you want to make in the next 4 minutes that you just want to share about one of the articles? And then we're going to move to the last section.
Okay, that was my point.
Great, Jardina, thank you for initiating that, and I'll go with that.
I'd like to make a point, and it might be a point on the points that have just been made. Mike and I are in another group where a lot of our discussion is around polarities. And in fact, Barry Johnson just has a new book called And I think he's trying to sell it to the new Biden administration, which is a good idea. One of the things I think embedded in a lot of these articles, and certainly it's a bias of mine, is that there are rarely two poles in a polarity. Like Jardina was talking about, you know, these multiple dimensions. And I'm sorry to say the world is just that complicated. We humans often grasp it better if we can bring it down into a merely two. It's sort of like that's our diversity that takes us beyond monolithic. We say, oh, there are two. Let's not, you know, get stuck on one or the other. But in fact, there are many others. And just that, as all the people we all here understand, it's this big interchange. And I think it's the totality of these articles really, for me, bring that out, although I don't think it was ever stated, so I decided I wanted to state it.
Right. And Bruce, that's a great observation. Again, like with polarity mapping, when we used to do it, when we first started doing it 30 or 40 years ago, it was a thing, centralization, decentralization. Now, from a complexity perspective, the way we manage that is, what's the pattern of things? It's really, what are the patterns of things that we want to do the polarity mapping on? It is not a single item, again, as Jardina suggested. All right. Anything else that anyone wants to share in terms of these articles or our conversation before I go to the last question that I kind of teed up at the beginning? And this is when you breathe in and breathe out. Good time to do that. A little bit of breath. My yoga instructor thing is coming out. I apologize. So here's how I want to wrap up our conversation today. Again, and I just love everybody's different perspectives and what they've shared. And again, interestingly, where the commonality, and I think that comes from our community about looking at how we've looked at these articles and really said, yeah, there's some things missing, but there's some nuggets. So the question that I have as we wrap up is, has anything we've had a conversation about today, either in this conversation or in the articles, might it change your practice somehow? Again, Bruce gave us a really good example where he said he might want to just take and adapt this the article, the first article, and in a way that actually resonates with him and probably with us. Really good example. Thank you, Bruce, for kind of illustrating that. Anyone else thinking that they might do something different Thursday, you know, tomorrow, or in the near term as a result of this?
Well, and for me, Naomi's article kind of got me thinking a little bit. Because typically, I try to, okay.
I hear you, Craig.
Yeah, it's we can go ahead, finish. We can hear you. We'll listen.
If you start throwing seven models at them, that they kind of glaze over. So but I have to think about where she's coming from and how we could use multiple models for that.
Sweet, sweet. Great. And so Craig is off and he's going to be integrating multiple models. Love that. Anybody else think about something that they, yes, Rich.
I'm not sure it's going to influence my practice immediately, but reading several of the articles, most prominently the one on racial bias, really took me back to the first times that I did consulting. And it's forcing me to confront how much of my practice is trying to convince my clients that I know better than they do, that, hey, you guys are prejudiced, and if you would only adopt my way of thinking, your business would be better. I'm really going to have to reflect on that.
There you go. Awesome. Thank you, Rich. Jackie.
I was able to use exactly the podcast from is it Paul Coughlin or Peter Dundon? Sorry, I can't remember his name. What I noticed we're running a series of events, and one of them, we talk about unconscious bias all the time with our clients, and it's given me another lens to talk to them through the idea of actually it's more than just unconscious bias and with the people themselves. There is a phenomenon that's happening, not because of COVID, but the prejudice, it's a cycle. And being able to kind of talk about that in the context of all of the challenges with the technical and the displacement. So that word was critical actually last week for me. And talking about that displacement helps some of our clients actually make sense of what they've been, because we put labels on everything because we need to understand it. And they're labeling it as unconscious bias, and we need to train our managers so they're not, but actually it went, once we had this conversation, it was like an unlocking. So we changed an event, a HR event that we were running in March, and reflavored it a little bit about displacement because of technology. So that was very valuable. And then I had to laugh. I tried to connect with the author on LinkedIn, and looking at my profile, but won't connect with me. And I was like, now I think he's a bit prejudiced towards me, and he's thinking whether he will or he won't. So I was well, listen, I'm not promoting your book anymore if you don't accept. I'll give him another week. He can look at me another three times. And then, but that actually made me quite curious about why people do that. You request a connection, and there's the looks on the outset, a legitimate business reason, and then people don't connect. It's a new phenomenon now I'm curious about. So there might be a blog in that.
There you go. Sweet, sweet. So again, because all of this is about, you know, we have these experiences, Jackie and others and Bruce, and what can we do with that? Because it's ultimately when we're not happy with what's happening in the world, what we can do is make happenings in the world.
So, William, I would also add that I would say moving forward, a way I could change in my practices from today's conversation, what not to do.
Yes.
And making sure I'm not doing some of the things that we all discussed, such as not being salesy and it not just being polarized, and really trying to make sure that all the different multiple polarities are all in place, et cetera. So I think today's presentation really helped me move forward with what not to do and making sure I practice accordingly.
And that's the idea of discernment. How do we learn discernment when all of these options are in front of us? Which way to go? So yes, again, incredible value in these articles in terms of reinforcing what we either know or what we need to be reminded that we don't want to do. Mike, how about you? Any about anything you might do differently?
Well, the Sephora article caught my attention. It reminded me when I was a teenager working the cashier at the corner drugstore, and black women would come into the store to go to the cosmetics counter, and there just wasn't anything there in terms of a blush that would meet their needs. And I thought to myself, well, what a huge business loss.
Yeah.
In terms, here's a whole untapped market. And then it sort of drove me to think about the fact that part of that is structural, that in our neighborhood, which was mostly white, there wasn't enough economies of scale perhaps to offer those products. And that goes to structural racism, for example, in terms of housing. So I'm currently just recently engaged with a group, a community-based organization that's looking to address some underlying systemic racist issues. And they were looking primarily at Park Ridge, where I live. But it seems to me that we need to, the term I'll use is reframe. We need to draw the frame a little bit larger in order to bring the communities together to get at the issues, because it's too monolithic in our particular suburb.
Right. So, and that's the idea of moving towards the ecosystem, what's happening in the ecosystem, and understanding it's a system and there's interdependencies, that if you just look at the silo or the particular location and only pay attention to that, you won't see it necessarily.
Yeah, you have to reframe it. And I'm starting in a consulting role now with the leadership in this group. And we're in the process of defining what is the ecosystem we're operating in, because whether you're going to affordable housing or justice or other things, you have to define the ecosystem first, understand who to build coalitions with in order to bring about the change you're looking for.
All right. Okay, well, thank you. We've got about 4 minutes left. I need to leave some time for Tanya to wrap up. Is there any last comment about what you might do as a result of this? You want to get that in, Gina?
Well, I'd like to validate. I read this morning this interview with Bill Gates, and I, full disclosure, he quite often makes me nuts because I feel like he's been really bubbled for a really long time. But he's come out with this book, and he said in it, he's talking about addressing energy. And of course, energy is on my mind lately. He said in there, he said, if you have the choice between reducing emissions or zero-based technology, look at how you're doing it. Take that every single time. So he's doing projects to reduce, making concrete, I didn't know this, is responsible for 8% of the emissions in the world. So he said, go look at how you're actually making concrete rather than try and, hit all these little things. So that's what you've all been saying. And I think that's kind of the takeaway from this is, you have to work on these things, you have to work on what you have to work on, but coming back to that challenging and basic assumption. So just wanted to validate that. So thank you. This has been wonderful. Even though I didn't read, I really had a nice surprise here. So thank you all.
Great. And that's a great way for us to, Jardina, go ahead.
Sorry, I just have to say one thing before I have a blurt here before we drop. Or before we turn it over, the Sephora article, I mean, kudos on them on doing the study, but I have to say the undercurrent of that article was, hey, people, stop being racist. You could make so much money if you weren't.
Yeah.
And that was a little bit offensive to me. I have to say, I'm going to appeal to people to not be racist because there's some money in it.
Yeah.
So it's a dimension, but it was a little out there.
It also illustrates really the world that we're coming from, the materialist world versus a world of meaning. All righty. Thank you so much. This has been great. I love being your host today. Tanya, I'm going to turn it back to you.
All right. Well, thank you again, William, for your time preparing for and helping everybody work through the flow of conversation today. My usual wrap up is just I'll let everybody know when the recordings are posted. If you are one of the folks who joined and do not yet receive the newsletter, let me know, reach out to me. I try to reach out to everyone who indicates that on their registration and let them know what it takes to get signed up, but happy to answer any questions on that. And thank you very much, everyone, for your time and energy here today.
Thank you, Tanya.
Thanks, Tanya.